I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Sunday, October 11th, 2020, and this is episode 89 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this is the second time that I'm recording this tonight, because the first time I didn't turn the microphone on. And that's because I'm recording on Sunday night, not in the morning like I usually do, and my mind is not at all fresh. But this week's best thing is my anniversary. Today is my 12th, wedding anniversary. And we just got home about an hour ago now from our little trip, our weekend trip. It was a working vacation trip to Roanoke, Virginia. My husband was working one day, and then we drove through the mountains to see the leaves changing. We did some hiking, and we did some just relaxing and resting for the rest of the time. And then we drove home, and my brain is a little fried, maybe from not doing enough or just from sitting in the car. It should be a four-hour trip. But it was 8 hours because we took the scenic route and then it was incredibly foggy. So yes, I apologize if I'm not firing on all cylinders and I'm a little extra tired because I'm very sad. The first version of this, I think, went really well. So if this doesn't, you know, you can all imagine the podcast that wasn't. But as you listen to this, this comes out on Columbus Day / Indigenous Peoples Day. So happy that day to you. It is nice to see that Indigenous Peoples Day is catching hold and, you know, the whole Columbus Day thing is sort of being put into the proper context. On that note, one of my grandfathers, was a bit of a fabulist, and he always told the story about how his grandfather was a Cherokee Indian chief named Chief Warcloud. Now, this is almost undoubtedly false. I have no actual reason to believe that he was any part Native American, but this is the story that he always told, that Chief Warcloud, and then he would go into some kind of story that is probably offensive on a lot of levels. My grandfather was very sweet, but everyone knew that he liked to tell tall tales. So while it's highly doubtful that I have any Native American blood in me, I do wish you all a happy Indigenous Peoples Day, and making sure that we remember the truth about this country, especially in these times. It's interesting because a lot of Black people think that they have Native American blood. There's a lot of sort of oral history, much like my grandfather's, that turns out to be not true. I think it was Henry Louis Gates. He does those genetic tests and see what, you know, tribe in Africa you're from and stuff. And you know, this high percentage of Black people believe that they have Native American blood, and a very, very tiny percent of us actually do. All of the blood that we have that is not African is basically white. And, like, I know my grandmother, at least, I know that her great-grandfather was the slave master. And so we know that her grandfather was the freed slave, and apparently, oral history is, he shook hands with Abraham Lincoln once. I don't know if that's true either, but, you know, that's how these things go in families. Anyway, my writing update. So, I'm still working on the 1920s fantasy heist story. I'm still having a lot of energy on it, and I'm still doing a lot of research on it. In fact, yesterday, I ended up doing more research than I had planned. It's so easy to fall down that hole. So, my intention had been to write a synopsis. The first stage synopsis, very bare bones. I still have a lot of decisions to make, but I wanted to get the things that I have down, or the things that I have in my head, at least on paper, and start narrowing things down. Because one of my big problems is being assaulted by all the possibilities of a story, especially at this beginning stage. And it's been a while since I've had this much room to breathe, you know. After doing like a 7-book series where things were set in stone, I have like the whole entire universe of the story to play with. And my job is to take it from, you know, a huge country of wide open spaces and bring it down and bring it down and bring it down until it's like the size of a house. So I have a structure and walls and a foundation to have a story take place inside of that. And it's about making decisions about everything. So I'm kind of working on everything in tandem. I'll spend some time doing world building. I'll spend some time on the magic system, on the characters, on the plot, and then go back and do a little bit of each because they all inform each other. And I'll make a decision, but it's not set in stone because as I do my research or as I have some insight or inspiration, it will cause me to rethink the decision that I had. And I want to be open to changing things. Like, it's too early for anything to be set in stone. But at the same time, things need to start being set in stone so that I can move on and have like these fixed points in time or these fix something, you know, to latch onto so that I know I'm starting to build that sort of fence. So we have these fence posts in the ground and then you build the actual things that connect the fence posts. And then you have a yard and you have something to play inside of so that it's not the entire state of Texas. It's just this yard and this house. And that's where the story happens. And that is difficult for me, but it is what I am trying to focus on now. But for example, yesterday when I thought I was going to be writing the synopsis, I took a slight detour to scratch a little itch in terms of like a thing that is in my mind that I was just going to do some quick research on that turned into several hours of research that turned into me signing up for the free trial to newspapers.com. And I might have had the free trial on a different account before. I'm probably going to have to start paying for these at some point in time very soon. They're like 7-day free trials. But yeah, I was looking at all these newspapers and I did find out two really juicy bits of information that I'm actually really excited about. So the day was not wasted, even though I didn't do what I intended to do. But I found out one of the pieces of information that I found was something that I had been wondering and I wasn't sure if I would be able to find any information on it. And I did. And I was like, oh. And the other one was a total surprise, but it's great. And I can use it in the character development because I do have my main characters. It's based on a real person that existed. And there are some articles about her. And I thought that I had found them all, but I hadn't. There was like a mention that I hadn't seen before. So that was great, but also not what I wanted to be doing that day. I also signed up for a workshop through one of the online RWA chapters, the Hearts Through History, which is the historical romance chapter, I guess. Although I think there's a couple other ones. But it had occurred to me as I was doing research that I would like to know a little bit more about how to do it to make sure that I'm doing things right. But also, I know that I just don't know all of the different types of resources that are available, and I would like to know more. So I happened to look on that day on their website, and the workshop had actually started 2 days before. So it was still accepting registrations. So I did register, and immediately, you know, the first lesson had already gone out, and it was like a barrage of information and resources and links. And I was like, whoa, okay, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep up with this class, but I do appreciate having the info, and I'll do my best. I can't... not sure if I'm going to actually participate, but I will be there lurking and sucking in information. So yeah, that was good. It might be overwhelm and maybe I don't need a class. So the class is on researching historical fiction, if I didn't say that before. And yeah, already I can tell it was a great idea. It's just, do I have time to really put in what I would need to get the most out of the class? But we'll see how it works out. But as much as I'm enjoying the research, I do know that it could stretch on infinitely. You know, like there is no end to the articles and books and newspapers that you could read about the time period and the characters and the things that I'm thinking about including in the book. And I don't want to spend years researching this. I want to spend maybe a few more weeks. Well, I know as I actually do the writing, the research is going to go in tandem. Like it's not just going to be, oh, it's over one day and then I'm just writing. But I also don't want to fall too far down the hole so that I'm not actually writing anything. That's where having the deadline is really helpful because it allows me to police myself a little bit and say like, okay, on this date, I want to have a synopsis, at least the first draft of the synopsis. That will help me focus my research more so it's not so expansive, and it will help me, you know, create these fence posts, these fixed points that I can then hang everything else on. I can have the spine, to add another metaphor, create a spine and then, you know, build the body out from there. Whereas now I've got bones all over the place and nothing is a solid structure yet, which is okay, but it can't last forever. You know, I can't be in this mode forever where I'm constantly second guessing myself. I'm constantly going back and changing decisions or rethinking decisions that I thought I'd made. And, you know, I have to balance being open to new things and the new ideas and the inspiration, and also getting this done in a reasonable amount of time. And so that is really my challenge. And it's a way that I kind of have to battle myself and, you know, the way that I want to have everything done, everything known at the very beginning. Like, that's always my instinct. But that's not possible. You know, like, that's completely impossible and impractical if it were possible. So I just need to know enough. And when am I going to feel like I have enough? Oh, I think I have to do that by an arbitrary date, because if I rely on myself, it could be next year before I feel like I have enough, and I want to get this done. So those are the things that I am struggling with and working on. But it's still really fun, and it's really, I still have a lot of energy about this project and this idea, and I'm still really excited about it. And, you know, even though I'm having a hard time narrowing down this vastness into the materials that I'm going to use and, you know, bringing it into this box and putting a fence around it, I'm still really loving everything about it. And I feel like the research is refilling the well, and it's feeding the inspiration in a really good way. I was having a conversation with my husband about microfiche, and I think he had been talking to his brother. And his brother is about 4 years younger than him, which would make his brother like 6 years younger than me. And he's never used microfiche. And my husband was like, yeah, I've seen microfiche, but I've never used it either. And I was like, but you were only 3 years behind me in school. I remember extensively using microfiche for research projects in the library. And like, the fact that if you are in your 20s, you probably have no idea what I'm even talking about, right? Like, Google microfiche. It's sad. It's kind of like rotary phones. Like, there's a funny video, I don't think I'll be able to find it, but these teenagers, their parents are like, dial this number on this phone and hand them a rotary phone. And they're like punching the buttons. And you're like, oh my gosh, you don't think about it, right? Like, no, they wouldn't know how to use a rotary phone. No, I guess they didn't use microfiche. And I'm trying to remember, I just feel like I used it so much, like in middle school and high school and then college. How did someone who was only 3 years behind me in school get away with not ever using it? Not that there's anywhere I can go at the moment to use microfiche, but I'm thinking in the future, when I can go to libraries and do more research, I'm sure those cool stuff on microfiche. Like, they'll never have that experience of putting the microfiche in the plate and then trying to figure out the direction that you're supposed to move the little arm in order to go up and down. Like, it's always this weird cognitive dissonance between what you're seeing on the screen and the actual direction you have to move the arm. Children today, these experiences that they'll never have. It's so sad. So as I'm developing the characters and the motivation and plot and everything, I'm thinking about the villain. And I've been going back and forth about the villain, like who the villain is. And then at a certain point, I was like, what kind of villain do I need to have? You know, like, I've been thinking I have to have this major antagonist that is, you know, locked against the protagonist. But now I'm kind of rethinking that. I'm rethinking villainy. A lot of times in heist movies, you know, sometimes you'll have the cat and mouse game where there's a law enforcement official who is on the trail of the criminals and the thieves. Then you've got like your Ocean's 12, or which is more of a villain. Ocean's 11 is Andy Garcia's kind of the villain, but it's more so just the job. I mean, a lot of times in other movies, it's just the job that's the villain, the difficulty of the job. So I kind of, you know, it really depends on what they're stealing and from whom, and then what kind of story you're trying to tell. And I've just been rethinking the idea of villainy and, yeah, the forces of antagonism. Is it going to be an actual person that is, you know, locked in this battle. I know I'm not going to go the cops and robbers route. That's not the kind of story that I'm interested in telling. But I kind of assumed that I was going to have this strong antagonist and who was the person that they're stealing from. And now I don't think I'm going to go that way. I'm not sure where I'm going, but just the idea of that. And it reminded me of the podcast with Jason Reynolds. It was Deadline City. And I talked about it a couple months ago. And he was talking about, he doesn't like fantasy, bless him, but he doesn't like villains either. He likes forces of antagonism. And that is more of a literary model, is what I was saying in the previous podcast. And I still believe that. But I think there's a way that you can do it in more of a commercial genre fiction model that can still work. So you have levels. You've got the, you know, the difficulty of the job is important in a heist. That's definitely a huge part of the antagonistic force. And then on top of that, you know, they can still be people, but can the people represent more the forces? I don't know. It's something I'm playing around with. And as I was going through all the different options of the different types of villain and the different characteristics this person would have and who are they and what's their background and how did they get to be this, you know, like all of those things, then I was like, do I want this person to be that? And what is a more interesting, creative way that I can execute that, you know? And it also goes kind of hand in hand with me thinking about the theme or the controlling idea of the story, which has been a concern of mine. Now, generally, I don't think that it's helpful, at least for me, to think about theme until after I've written at least a draft. But because I have this desire to have everything known up front, I have been thinking about it. And I don't think it's helpful. I think I really need to step back from that and just give myself some grace about that. Because when you think about theme too much up front, I think there is a tendency that the story can get preachy and overly messagey, and that's never what I want. But it's important for me for my stories to have a message without being preachy, like to have a worldview or something to say about the world, but not a message, but something to say about the world. But I also know that that's going to come through whether I can articulate it consciously now or not. Like no matter what I do, whatever I write is going to have my views about the world baked into it. And I have been a little bit stymied by the fact that I can't really articulate it. Like I have these ideas and I've got these like flashes of inspiration that are song lyrics or poetry or something that's like, yes, that's it. Or that's kind of it. Or that's so close to it. But I can't really put it into words. And when I try to put it into words, I'm like, well, how do I make that into a story? And it just seems like a bad scene all around. So it's my instinct to do certain things. And I'm trying to pull back and be like, that is not where I'm at right now. It's not where I need to be. And it will come through more naturally if I don't focus on it right now. Like there are certain things that I have to focus on. I have to plan, you know, the heist. I have to, you know, all the elements of it. I've been researching those too. Like those things have to be carefully plotted for me. But this idea of theme or controlling idea or the thing that I'm trying to say in the story is something that I know it's there. You know, it's there with the story. It exists. I just haven't found it yet. And because I haven't written it yet, you know, and that's something that probably can't be planned, or it's better if it's not planned. It's more natural and organic. And I've never planned it ahead of time before, you know, so it's like, why should I try to do it now? And I shouldn't, but I kind of want to anyway. Writing is hard. Speaking of which, I subscribe to Agent Dongwon Song's newsletter, which is called Publishing is Hard. And his most recent one that I got is called This is Advice. And it is, I'm going to leave a link to the newsletter in the show notes because I think it's a really helpful one. He has a paid version and a free version. And so the paid version, there's more posts than certain ones he gives out for free. And so in this one, he goes, my advice is to always listen, but to also question whether or not you should follow, to hear it, but make sure it fits for you. Just because it was given doesn't mean it has to be taken. Your instincts are your first, best, and only guide. Learn to balance listening with trusting in yourself, including now. And I thought that was really good advice because people ask me for advice all the time. And I think it's good if you are, you know, a newer writer and you're trying to seek out more established people or people with more experience and get advice from them. It's a great strategy. But also, everyone is so different. So knowing how to evaluate the advice you're given is super important. I try to always start out with like, okay, what is your goal? Like if someone's like, oh, should I do traditional publishing or self-publishing? Should I go wide or KU? You know, this and this, like all of these different options that people ask about. And it really comes down to what your goals are because different things work for different people. So there is no advice that's one size fits all. So that's step one. And then step two is the intuition thing that he's talking about. Your instincts, some advice immediately feels wrong. You could have the most successful, you know, person in the world tell you something that worked for them, but it feels wrong for you. I mean, plotting and pantsing, you know, like you have to evaluate this advice and trust yourself. And I think that developing trust in yourself is huge to most endeavors, but especially to writing. And things like imposter syndrome and the doubts that we all have, no matter how successful you are, come in and batter against that self-trust. But at the end of the day, you know, when you're the only way that you know that you're done, the way that you evaluate your own ideas, the way that I know, oh, this feels right, this doesn't feel right, this book is not ready. It is not ready. I need another pass. I need to push back the publication date. That's all about trusting yourself. And I see a lot, especially since I'm doing Pitch Wars right now, I'm serving as a mentor for Pitch Wars, and a lot of, you know, kind of looking at the way the applicants are on social media and kind of the questions that people are asking, developing that self-trust is going to be so important for a lot of people. So if you're not familiar, Pitch Wars is like this contest where writers who are unagented are kind of applying to be mentored. And so I'm serving as a co-mentor with my friend Denny S. Bryce, going through all the submissions. I'm happy to say that as of today, I have gone through all of the submissions we received. And now we're going through the even harder process of picking, or starting the process of picking. So many of them are so good. It is going to be really, really difficult to choose. It's... I don't envy myself for the weeks to come. Because, yeah, the quality has been, for the most part, really high. And I wish that we could, you know, choose all of the ones that I love, but we can't. So I have so much empathy for agents and editors who do this all the time, you know, get hundreds of submissions a day or whatever and have to go through them. You really understand what it means when agents say, because some things just leap off the page and smack you in the face and you're like, whoa, in a sentence or two, in a paragraph, you know, like, I need to take another look at this. I want to request this. This is amazing. And then you get a lot of ones that are just really strong and good writing and clean and great ideas and creative. And you're like, how do I choose? So the ones that leap off the page are few and far between. And that makes it a little easier, but there were several of those. And then there are all the other really good ones. So that process is ongoing. And we have till the end of the month to choose our mentee. And then we choose the mentee to work with. We'll work with them for 3 months on their manuscript. And at the end, there's the agent showcase where they will pitch a bunch of agents and hopefully, you know, move forward from there in their publishing career. So yeah, it's exciting. I know a lot of people are nervous, that a lot of the submitters are very nervous, and are they going to get requests? Are they going to get chosen? It's the competition is really, really hard. So everyone out there who is waiting to hear back with bated breath, just know that, you know, we're making really difficult decisions between things that we really like a lot. And yeah, I don't know what we're going to do. I did want to say that this podcast, My Imaginary Friends, made a list of 10 bookish podcasts on booktrip.com. So shout out to Tiff Marcello for that. It was really nice to see. I know that she's going to be starting her own podcast soon, and I'm excited about that for when that comes. I'm sure I will be telling you all about it when it comes out. My book, Song of Blood and Stone, also made this list on Book Riot of 20 must-read fantasy romance books, which was super gratifying. And it's among some of my favorite writers and books. So that's also super exciting. And it's just nice to kind of get that feedback that you did something before that people really liked. And so you can hopefully do it again. Like, I do hope, as I'm going through all of the struggles with this, you know, creating this thing that will become a manuscript at some point, that I have done this before. Each time you do it, it feels completely new and different. And that's, I guess that's the joy and the pain of writing. Writing is hard. Also, a reminder that Under a Winter Sky is available for pre-order. That is the anthology that I'm in, along with Jeffy Kennedy, Melissa Marr, and Kelly Armstrong. Book 3.5 of Earthsinger Chronicles is in it. And I just got it back from the proofreader, so I will be turning it in officially as soon as I read it over and, you know, do my last pass. So yes, you can pre-order from my website. You can get a signed print copy from me or any of the other authors. We're all kind of individually selling signed print copies. We'll also be doing some signed book plates because we're all in different places and Kelly is in Canada. So we are going to try to do these book plates, which was my idea. And I think I need to design them, which is something that I'm going to put on my list for this week, to design book plates and get the pricing and printing them and all of that stuff. So that'll be a nice treat. Also, I've got some workshops that I'm teaching, and I will link to my events page. I'm going to be teaching two workshops at the Writer's Digest Conference in early November, one on organizing your writing life. So if you are interested in more organizing tips from me, that's going to be fun. I'm excited about that. And one on writing fantasy. And then I'm doing another workshop the next weekend for the Muse Writer Center. These are all online, and that one is going to be on fantasy world building specifically. So check out my events page, which is lpenelope.com/calendar, or just go to my website for more information on those things. Should be fun. And that is it for me for this week. For real, this time. My goals are to get a first draft of a synopsis done so I can hopefully start, you know, making these fixed points, these things that I will not change, hopefully, and maybe get a schedule together. I've got the loose schedule, so that's probably all I need, but definitely synopsis and continue to work on the character, the plot, the magic system, the world building, everything that's needed to actually start writing this book. Yeah, and so I hope that you have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you next week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. I would really appreciate a rating or review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.